Hello, hello. Welcome back to my podcast. My name is Ashley Roberts, and I am the wife of a recovering addict. So this week, I actually am getting a little bit on schedule now in terms of making podcasts, although this is only the second week, so we'll see how that goes in the future. But this one, I figured I would do another, I guess you could say, list, like last week. This one is three things I would never ever do again as someone who is married to a recovering addict. So let's get into it. My name is Ashley, and my partner is in recovery for addiction. It's hard to find others like myself, but we're out there with a story to be heard. This is mine, and this is Ashley Speaks Up. So as I've mentioned, yes, this is the list of three things I would never, ever do again as someone married to a recovering addict. And you would think that there would be more than just three, but these are the three main ones because, you know, we can add a ton of stuff in there. And I'm sure everybody can relate to having made mistakes before in any capacity, not just if you have a partner who's an addict. And the thing is, though, I like to look back on them as just lessons. You know, like I could look back and think, wow, I shouldn't have done that. How embarrassing. I wish I could change these things. But really, I feel like those things are the things that made me who I am today. You know, they influence my decisions now in, you know, maybe small ways that I wouldn't even notice, but they definitely have influenced me in a positive way. And we could think, you know, well, these things happened and I regret them and, you know, all of these terrible things. Or we could just take them as a positive instead. You know, I'm grateful for the things that I've done and mistakes and lessons that I have learned because I believe they made me into a better person. So instead of looking back with regret and sadness, I like to look back and maybe be a little surprised, but I definitely am grateful for a lot of things. Maybe not at the time, but you know, hindsight is 20/20. Now, surprisingly, the first one is not support them. I know that a lot of people might be surprised about that since it's a common thing to get overwhelmed and stressed out, just living in the absolute chaos. But generally, unless there's violence or something extreme like that involved, support and empathy is incredibly helpful to addicts, even if it's from a distance. Now, I say that because, you know, you could think, well, you know, we've all heard tough love. You know, we've all heard about that concept, you know, and having family members or well-meaning friends saying, you know, you just need to kick them to the curb. Like, don't support them. They need to figure things out on their own. And while that is true, I don't really think that that is a completely right way to do things. Now, obviously, it's different for everyone. So I will just speak from my own experience, as I've always done. But I didn't like that. I didn't like cutting off contact just because people said I should. You know, like just doing what other people said because I thought that that was the quote unquote right thing to do. And that's what I learned, you know, as I started putting myself first, working on myself, all of that stuff, turning the focus on myself. I had to do things from my own decisions, like my own inner guidance, if you will. Because that's the only way that it could stick. And it's the same with like boundaries or even something extreme like an ultimatum. You know, if you just do something because somebody tells you that you should, but you don't really care that much or you're not really like, you don't really have the motivation to do it, it's going to fall apart. It's not going to stick. You're not going to be willing to stand behind that. And it's kind of like with anything, you know, somebody says, oh, you need to eat healthy or you should come do this workout with me at the gym or this or that. If you're not actually motivated to do it, it's going to be a painstaking endeavor. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be not fun because you're just forcing yourself to do it because you believe that you should. And that's not any way to make a decision, you know, and like, obviously, like I said, you can do it from a distance. I had to do it from a distance towards the end there because it was just absolutely out of control. But I was still there supporting. I didn't cut off all contact. I didn't say, you know, contact me when you're sober. Like, there was none of that. And like I said, I know it's different for everyone, but for me personally, that's how it was. You know, I still was very vocal about my support. I still stayed with him and, you know, there were times where we weren't living together, or, you know, communication was very, very short. And, you know, like, I would just hear about things from other people. But he knew that as long as it was a safe situation and boundaries were still in place or whatever, he was able to contact me within reason, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I do believe that anybody, not even just addicts, anybody who is going through a tough time, even if you're not, support is awesome. To know that other people around you support you and they want what's best for you and they're rooting for you, that is awesome for anybody. So that is definitely not my number one thing. I will always advocate for support and empathy and understanding and all of that good stuff. All right, so my actual number one thing that I would never, ever do again as someone married to a recovering addict is force things that aren't working. Now, for me, this looked like continuing couples therapy to the point where he'd show up not even functional. Showing up at the sober living to pick him up for the gym when he'd been up for 3 days and had no intention of going. Or trying to detox him at home or force a recovery plan on him that was made up by yours truly, who is not a doctor or a therapist. So, you know, it was just basically, like I said, forcing things that aren't working. You know, like, of course therapy is a good thing. Couples therapy is great. Going alone to therapy is great. Any kind of that, or any kind of therapy, anything like that is good. I will always advocate for that. However, when I know that he's not doing well, trying to keep a therapy appointment for us to go together is not that great of an idea, looking back in hindsight. In my mind at the time, I thought that it was good. You know, I thought that this was part of helping him and, you know, getting him the support that he needs. Like, well, he's not going to go alone, but maybe I can, you know, coerce him into coming with me and making sure he shows up, which actually at that time we didn't ride together. But when he's showing up and, you know, he's like bleeding and he's slurring his words and, you know, shuffling his feet because he's barely able to walk, I really don't think that sharing our feelings and figuring out how to function in a relationship is really a good idea. You know, like, we should be figuring out like, actually, we shouldn't, I don't even think we should have been figuring anything out together. Like, he was definitely not in a place where therapy would have really been beneficial. You know, he just needed to go to a hospital, which is where he ended up going after. And it was just a mess. It was honestly a mess. I remember bits and pieces of that night because I probably shoved it away where I can't access it consciously. But, you know, it was just a very tumultuous time. And I really wish that I could have seen that for what it was. But like I said, looking back, I get it. You know, it helped me to realize that there are some things that are just out of my control. And all of those things culminated into a point where, you know, it helped me to realize that I did need to stop doing all that stuff and just work on myself. But it was definitely tough at the time. And that event, like that day where I showed up at the gym, or not at the gym, I showed up at his sober living to take him to the gym. I remember our daughter was in the back seat, and I don't even know how I convinced him to come outside. I think I just wouldn't leave. But he ended up coming outside and sitting in the car with us, and he was just not there at all. Like, there was, I don't know who that was, which is very creepy, but it was definitely not the person that I was expecting. And I remember I was trying to talk to him. It was nearly impossible. Our daughter was, I don't know, 2 or 3. She was obviously confused because she knows that that person looks like her dad, but he is not acting normal at all. So looking back, maybe I shouldn't have brought her along too. But yeah, again, that person does not need the gym. in my mind, the gym like solves everything. Like, oh, you don't feel good? Let's go to the gym. Oh, you need some motivation? Let's go to the gym. Let's, you know, try to lighten your spirits. But when you are on a meth binge and haven't slept for like, I don't know, 3 days, however long it was, the gym is probably not gonna be the saving grace that gets your life on track. So yeah, I ended up leaving because the gym was not happening. I called my sponsor as I was driving away, and I'm pretty sure that if we were recording that scene, it could have won an Oscar. It was very emotional, but it was very tough. So, you know, little things like that. Detoxing at home. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. Looking back, it's very unsafe. I am not a doctor, obviously. But somehow, I don't even know how he got methadone in the first place, because I don't think he went to a clinic. So that is a little bit questionable. But I was in charge of dosing him, which is not a good idea. And I don't even know how long it went on, but I was like, we were trying to taper him off of it. At one point, I thought it was a good idea to give him cherry flavored like cough medicine to see if he would notice. This whole thing was an absolute mess. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. It was very dangerous and very stupid. But looking back, again, all of these things were a culmination of bad decision making that I thought was really good at the time. And all of it made me realize that nothing that I do is going to get him into recovery. Nothing. No, like, quick fixes or forcing or trying to better myself just to get him into recovery. Like, it took trying everything under the sun to realize that nothing that I would do would get the results that I wanted. And even when I decided to put myself first, I didn't go into it thinking like, okay, well, nothing else is working, I'm gonna try this to try to get him. I was just like, I am miserable. This is terrible. Nobody wants to live like this. I cannot keep living like this. This is scary. This is a nightmare. The only way that I can think of to make myself feel better is to do this, is to focus on myself, because having all of my attention on somebody else when it's not doing anything is just a complete waste of time, and it's just getting worse. The more stuff I try to do, it keeps getting worse. So I stopped doing things that weren't working. And I tried to do something that would, which is work on myself. And here we are today. So I would like to say that I eventually made the right decision. Coming in at number 2 of things that I would never, ever do again as the partner of an addict. Continue enabling behaviors that I believed were quote-unquote helpful, like giving him access to money because I didn't want him to need it and not have it. You know, like for food, which, spoiler alert, it never went to food. At least I don't think so. And if it did, it was probably some random gas station food or drive-through food. Some other things. I would contact his boss to explain his behaviors. You know, things like that. That are really weird. I never really thought about how it would seem for his boss to get a call from the fiance of one of his workers to explain his behaviors or like what he was doing. Like, that's gotta be so weird. I don't even know if parents do that for their actual children that are like, you know, school age at work. Like, that's like one of the pinnacles of responsibility, like getting a job, is that you speak for yourself. But I still thought it was a good idea, because there were certain times where he was the only one working. So I kind of relied on that. We all relied on that as a family, you know, his income. So obviously there was a fear that if we didn't have that, things would get way worse. So I would do things like that, contact his boss or whatever, explain away his absences, his strange behaviors, things like that. And I guess you could say that I had like I was well-meaning in that, but nobody should ever have to do that. It's not great. It definitely doesn't look good, in my opinion, and it probably makes things worse. The same with giving money. Like, there was one point way back when I first met him that I gave him access to a credit card of mine. I made him an authorized user. That was not a good idea either, because I thought I had good intentions. I thought, you know, like, if he needs food or something, because he's spending all of his money on drugs, I want him to have money for food. But it just also goes to drugs. And it's not that he's a terrible person, but obviously if you're using all of your money on non-necessities and you're neglecting yourself, it's really hard to then get more money and be like, well, you know, I think I'm actually going to use this to take care of myself. Like, that's just, that logic is not there, at least in my case with him. So honestly, I was just making things worse under the guise of thinking I was making things better. So definitely something that you want to consider. Like, of course, we all want to be helpful to somebody that we think is struggling, that we care about. You know, like, that's just a basic human reaction. But it is important to consider the things that will happen if you do those helpful things. You know, the things that are actually enabling. And it's tough to hear sometimes, especially if you're very emotionally attached to the outcome and the situation and everything. It can be really hard to learn that you are doing more harm than good because you think that you're helping them. But in reality, you're making things a lot worse most of the time and probably bringing them closer to an outcome that you do not want. So definitely something to consider. And something that I think that ties in with this too, and kind of just with the whole idea of wanting them to recover as a whole, besides the fact that you care about them, like the kind of panicked need for them to be okay or for them to hurry up and get into recovery is just so you can feel better most of the time. Because if it wasn't about that, you wouldn't be quite so panicked. It wouldn't be such a negative, chaotic thing like that you're feeling. Most of the time, you just want them, when you're in that panic state, you just need them to recover, and you want them to recover because you want to feel better. Because you want to be like, okay, now we're done with that. Now I can feel better. Now they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now I can feel better. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't have to stress about it anymore. But for one, there really is no point where they're quote unquote safe. Like, even now, my partner, my husband could relapse at any time. That's just how it is. Like, if you have cancer, yeah, you could be in remission and that's great, but there's always the chance that it could come back. That's just how it is. And once I realized that I could never get to a point where I felt okay just doing what I was doing, you know, like, I would always be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I would always be on high alert. I would always be searching for things, playing detective, searching his car, questioning him, starting arguments. You know, like, I would look for things that weren't even there. I would find things that weren't even there because I just needed to feel like I was right. When in reality, like, I just could never not be okay. Like, I would think, okay, once he's in recovery, I'll be okay. No, I never was okay. So that's why you have to focus on yourself and do the work on yourself so that you get to a place where you don't feel like that all the time. You don't have to have other people do certain things in order for you to feel okay. Like, when I started to feel okay after I started working on myself this last time around, he was really bad. I didn't know where he was most of the time, and he certainly wasn't contacting me. But I was like, you know what? That's fine. He'll figure it out. I have hope and trust in him. He'll figure it out. And he did. And I know that doesn't work for everybody. I know that's not how everybody's story ends. But the goal was to feel better. And I got to that point, no matter what was happening. I felt okay. And that's the point. That no matter what is going on outside of you, you know that you're good. You have trust in yourself that you'll be good. Like, you'll be okay. You'll be strong. You'll be confident. You'll get through it. And that is very, very important. And it is absolutely priceless. All right. And the last, but certainly not the least one, or the last and certainly not the least neglect myself, which is, I don't know, maybe that's not as groundbreaking as I'm hoping it is. But anyways, yeah, neglect myself. I would never, ever neglect myself again, which of course ties into what I'm always talking about, which is putting yourself first and all that stuff, which I'm sure is really annoying to hear at this point, but that's the answer. So yeah, I would never neglect myself again because I know how important it is to work on myself. Like even with therapy, you know, you go to therapy and you learn all these different things, but honestly, nobody's forcing you to do anything. Like the therapist can help you identify things about yourself and give you ideas on how to do it, but you actually have to do the work. Like you're in charge of that. You can go to the therapy for years, but if you don't actually put it into practice, you're kind of at the same point. I mean, maybe you have a little bit more information about yourself, but you got to actually do it. Just like if you, you know, learn about working out, which I know I always bring that up, but it's one of my biggest hobbies, but you know, you can learn how to use all the different machines and stuff, and you can learn proper form and proper technique, and you can learn about progressive overload and all of these different things, and you can buy the workout clothes, like the matching sets and the really nice shoes and this and that. But if you don't actually go to the gym and try to do the exercises, you won't really know how, like, decent you are at it. Like, you won't know if you're actually doing them right until you actually try. Like, you could think you have it down, but if you don't actually put in the physical work, like, nothing's ever going to change. You're never going to wake up and be like, wow, I look really good. You're never going to get stronger. You're never going to improve in any capacity with that if you don't actually go. And sure, you might, you know, mess up a little bit. You might look kind of stupid trying to do all these different exercises, but that's how you actually improve. And that's how you get to a point where you are a lot more fit and you have a higher endurance and, you know, it actually looks like you know what you're doing. It's the same thing with therapy or with working on yourself. You can learn all these different things, but unless you actually do it and put in the work to change your mindsets and your ways of thinking and your beliefs and your habits and everything, nothing's ever going to change. You're just going to have all this new information and you're probably just going to make yourself feel guilty because you're not doing anything. At least that's what I did. So yes, it's incredibly important, as I've always said, to always put yourself first and both start and continue that self-work to ensure your health and happiness, no matter what is going on in your external world. So when you get to this point where you are working on yourself, I don't know why I keep saying working yourself. When you are working on yourself, focusing on yourself, putting yourself first, it allows you to have this newfound point of clarity. At least it did for me. You know, because when you're not working on yourself and you're just feeling terrible all the time, you just get stuck there. That's what you know. That's what's comfortable. Even if it's not ideal, that's just the regular. That's just how life is. So you get stuck in these terrible ways of thinking and it just like stems from there. One terrible thought leads to another terrible thought, which leads to another terrible thought. Then you got beliefs that are coming in because this is all you know. And you're like, well, life just must be this terrible. Like, obviously, nothing is changing. So I'm just destined to have this miserable life. And this is all it's ever going to be. When in reality, you could do anything at any point to change that. And your life will not be miserable anymore. Like, at least in, of course, my experience. And then another thing that happens is you get this clarity, you start to feel stronger, you start to feel more secure in yourself, you start to feel more confident, like, okay, I can handle these things. From that point, I was actually able to support him in a way that was meaningful. It wasn't enabling, it wasn't coercion, it wasn't ultimatums, it wasn't forcing him to do anything, it wasn't guilt tripping him, anything like that. It was like, okay, I see you were struggling, and I just want you to know that I do support you still, even if I'm not there holding your hand and guiding you in the way that I think you should go. I am still supporting you. And I would just let him know that, you know. He would say really mean things because he wasn't himself when I wouldn't give him money or I wouldn't, you know, do certain things for him. Like, I don't know, give him a ride somewhere or something or let him live with us. Or there was this one time where our daughter had a birthday and I would not let him go. I didn't tell him where it was or anything, so I didn't want him to show up because he was weird and not sober, and I really didn't want that to be the focal point of her birthday party. She didn't deserve that. And of course, I was called a terrible person and all of those things, but when you get to a point where you are working on yourself, you don't care because you're like, okay, I get it. But at the same time, this is my boundary. This is what I need. And that's just how it happens. So I still supported him this whole time emotionally, but I just wasn't giving in to his, you know, active addiction demands. And so that's really an important step on how you can support somebody without enabling them. And it could be similar or it could be different for you. But the important thing is that you get to that point where you can support them in a way that actually helps them and helps you, and you feel good about it and you feel more sure about yourself. And you know that you're actually doing things that are beneficial. You know, boundaries are very important, all of these different things. And like, I don't know if this is true, and this is definitely not a reason to do these things, but my husband did say that my ability to make healthy boundaries and stick with them and not let him control my actions or anything and not just letting him do whatever he wanted was a very big help in him getting sober. Because, you know, he realized that I wasn't just going to be there to do his bidding at every hour of the day. And that while I still supported him, it wasn't going to fly anymore unless he made some changes. And that was up to him to make those changes, though. I wasn't like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this and I really hope that he's going to change. Like, no, I was like, no, you can't be in my life like this anymore. So if you change, you can come back. That's cool if we can see that you're actually making some progress. But if not, I will just have hope over here in my healthy little life. But not only that, not only from the like actually supporting them angle, when you work on yourself and you get clarity and you're not just running around in this life of chaos and stress and anxiety, you actually get to a point where you're like, okay, now I understand more about myself. Now I know what I actually want in my life, like as a whole, like even outside of your relationship or whatever. You know, you might finally figure out what it is you want to do for work. Maybe you realize there's some other things that aren't working, like you actually don't like your job. Or you find out different ways to parent. You find out different ways to connect with your kids or with your parents or your siblings. Or there's like a ton of different things that get opened up once you have that clarity and you're not, you know, living in craziness. And it's really helpful, obviously, because I was very surprised how many different parts of my life changed just from doing this. You know, it wasn't just like groundbreaking milestones in our relationship and all of the stuff that has to do with addiction. It was everything. Like my whole mindset and outlook on life was definitely improved. And from there, I felt like I could make decisions that were so much more in line with how I truly felt and truly believed. And it was revolutionary. So yeah, working on yourself has very many benefits. There are a very large amount of things that can change when you actually start working on yourself. And it's not even just with addiction and with your partner. It's everything, which is why I keep pushing it. You know, that's the only thing that worked for me. So I definitely hope that you can be influenced to do that as well. Well, as I mentioned before, I am trying to get more on a schedule of doing this, but at the same time, it still does take a significant chunk of my time. So these are going to be a little shorter, a little on the short end, which I don't know. Maybe it's not on the short end. Maybe a short podcast is like 10 minutes. I don't know. But in my mind, like a decent sized podcast is like, what, 45 minutes to an hour, maybe even longer than that, maybe even 2 hours. I don't know. But then again, it is just me talking. So maybe if I had somebody else on here, it would go a little longer. But anyways, that about wraps up this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If there's a way for you to comment on whatever platform you're listening to this on, definitely please do. Let me know how you enjoyed it, if you did enjoy it at all, or if there's anything that you would add. You can also find me on basically every social media platform, at least all the major ones. I am on Facebook. I have my page on there for my blog. I have a TikTok and an Instagram, and I believe I have a Thread account. I'm on YouTube, but that's a whole nother ballgame. But anyways, enjoy the rest of your week. Keep an eye out for future podcasts. So subscribe if you would like, or you can also find this on my blog as well. But yeah, have a good week, and I will see you next time.